It was a pain point that was expressed in their voice of the customer surveys, and it was also a pain point that was being expressed by their associates on their store floors. But the problem wasn't there. The problem was in the ERP system, and the problem was in the processes of actually having the ERP system know what the inventory statuses were. And one of the questions asked in that was the process of bringing a product to commerce or to a store and the process of discontinuing.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Building information architecture for e-commerce companies is not easy. Most e-commerce companies serve B2B and B2C, so they need customer-facing websites along with an ERP. But then, with the blurring business models, e-commerce companies, especially those that are DTC, are expected to do a lot more, including managing their complex warehouses and sometimes their fleet for the last mile delivery if 3PLs may not be as cost effective or might not be able to meet the lead time requirements of the customer. In addition, these fleets might soon need IoT devices and GPS to appropriately track the driver compensation and provide the tracking to compete with the likes of Uber Eats, which will increase the complexity of the architecture further. Also, just like Google started creating partnerships with big box retailers to provide the product and store experience, more e-commerce companies will start creating similar partnerships or open their experience stores, complicating the architecture further. In today's episode, we invited a panel of cross-functional experts for a live interview on LinkedIn, who brings significant expertise to discuss implementing systems for e-commerce companies. We covered many grounds, including several e-commerce stories and the role of the PIM system in the e-commerce architecture. Finally, we discussed several scenarios to handle e-commerce architecture challenges, such as when multiple ERP systems feed a single website versus multiple brands sourced from a single ERP system. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. For today, we have a topic called e-commerce. And the twist that we are going to discuss for this e-commerce topic is really going to be e-commerce information architecture. In my experience, that is always the hardest part. A lot of people talk about digital transformation. They talk about digital transformation failure. But the reason why digital transformation initiatives fail is because nobody is really willing to invest time that is required to build the right architecture, how the systems are going to be talking to each other so that they can provide the business value. So we are going to dig into all of that. But before that, we are going to start with everybody's intros. I am going to start with Phil. Phil, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Kerper with Ringling Business Solutions. We help CEOs and executive leadership teams align their digital transformation process with their core business plans. And I'm coming off about 25 years serving as a CEO and president in various companies, mid-market size. And Sam, really look forward to joining the team and contributing tonight.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Phil. Your stories are going to be so fascinating. Chris, can I move to you next for your intro, if you don't mind?
Yes, thank you, Sam. I am Chris Harrington, President and COO of Gen Alpha Technologies. We equip manufacturers and distributors with the e-commerce software that they need to sell their products online. Typically, that is new and used equipment along with aftermarket components. So, pleasure to be here with you all today.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for joining Chris today. Chris, can I move to you next for your intro?
Sure. Thanks, Sam. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Chris Ghirardini. I'm the president and owner of Turnkey Technologies. We're a 27-year plus now implementing Microsoft Dynamics ERP and CRM solutions. E-commerce is always in the mix for some of the directives, so we look forward to the conversation today.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Chris. Dave, can I move to you next for your intro, if you don't mind?
Yeah, happy to. Thanks, Sam. Hey, everybody. My name is Dave Chrysler, and I own a company called the Chrysler Club, where we work with business owners to help them create the systems they need to stop working in their business so it can grow. I've spent more than 20 years in the manufacturing space, directly responsible for operations. So excited to join the panel tonight. Thanks, Sam.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Dave. Chuck, can I move to you next for your intro?
Sir, my name is Chuck Coxhead from ProCensus, and after 30 years in manufacturing, including e-commerce and brick and mortar, I have moved on to focus on warehouse processes, and I create warehouse superheroes. We make those users as powerful as we can make them so the folks can do as much as possible with the resources that they have.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chuck, for the intro. And now we are going to dig right into the topic, which is going to be the e-commerce information architecture. And we are going to pick every slice of different micro verticals from your experiences in the industries where you have seen different e-commerce architecture. So obviously, if we look at the e-commerce complexity from the system perspective, we are going to have tons and tons of systems. And in my experience, if I look at the average e-commerce companies, they typically utilize roughly 4 to 5 systems. Sometimes they might be connected, sometimes they might not be connected. Now, those systems could be your actual e-commerce, then you have your product information management PIM that actually does things from the marketing perspective. You have your e-commerce, you have ERP, CRM, marketing automation. Sometimes you might have 2 CRMs, one for marketing automation, one for real CRM. And then you might have WMS, TMS. There is going to be a little bit of process handoff there. Then you have a lot of things from the manufacturing perspective as well, if you are going to do your in-house manufacturing. So now each of the micro verticals, when we look at, they are going to have different needs because the products are different, the experience is different, the kind of customers they are serving is going to be different. So Phil, I am going to start with you, your stories. You know, what has been your experience? Pick a micro vertical, describe the products, describe a little bit about the business model, and talk about the information architecture. Talk about source of authority in the architecture.
So I'll give you 2 examples. One of them is an HVAC manufacturer that set up their platforms to be able to sell to distributors, to dealers, and to end users. So there was a B2C component of this structure, but it was primarily the more complicated B2B. And as all of this panel knows, I'm sure a lot of your audience knows, the B2B structures are much more complicated. To make them work right and make them have that front end appeal is a harder lift. So in this particular case, the architecture that we had to think about was all the customer touch points and really start in the eye of each of those customers and what their experience and touch points would have to look like. And then also looking to your point on the back end of all the information we are going to need to pull out. In this case, the e-commerce platform was separate from the CRM. So those were 2 different software platforms. And then the ERP was a platform on the back end. So as far as the data talking to these, we really had to think through what type of information was going to be shared and really had to graph every touch point that the customer was going to have and make sure that we were providing content and providing support for those touch points. So it was painting a very complex picture. And then dealing with how are we going to share information. To be honest with you, the mechanics of sharing information was the easy part. Once we knew what we wanted to share and what data we wanted to use, you know, the APIs and some of the add-ons and those modules was actually an easier component. And the second story I'd share is a company that was strictly industrial sales, commercial industrial sales, but they had 5 different brands, and each of the brands had a different go-to-market strategy. So sometimes there might have been distributors involved. Sometimes it was direct sales to industrial end users. In that particular case, the challenge was really understanding what the go-to-market strategy was for each of those so that we could align the e-commerce platforms and the CRM in this case with that customer experience and data information. So I would say 3 things for everybody. First of all, it's complex. roll up your sleeves. It's business process development, and then it's taking that to your digital structure development. Really think about your customer touch points and where your value add is, and then do the hard work of laying it out in a picture so everybody can understand it while you start developing the platforms that you're putting against that.
Okay, thank you so much, Phil, for that. And those are really very interesting story and the real world picture that everybody should be ready for. But I'm going to have some clarifying questions there. I don't know if you're in a position to provide, some of the use cases so that people can relate how, let's say, e-commerce was integrated with CRM. Was it real time? Was it more of batch? Which was the source of authority for, let's say, customer data? Was it ERP? Was it CRM? Was it e-commerce? Did you run into any challenges in making sure these systems are going to talk to each other?
So we had data in both places. It was optimizely in the e-commerce in one example and Salesforce on the CRM. So we definitely had APIs that were calling each other real time when the customer needed information, but most of it was coming back around to batches and going back and looking at what had happened, for instance, in the CRM and having a dashboard with reports on the CRM. E-commerce, there was a lot more calling out in APIs. The PIM question is also interesting. Yep. In this particular case, we started by not having separate PIM software, and that was a mistake. And that, we then were trying to have some information that was sitting in the e-commerce platform, some sitting in CRM, some sitting in ERP. And we ended up having to go back around and say, we really need to have a strategy around the PIM of the information that all of those platforms could draw from. So early on, we didn't see the need for that. Later, we definitely did. And as far as the type of information that needs to be real time, my experience on that is, pick your fights. It may seem like these things have to be real time. Obviously, freight needs to call out for freight information, but a lot of the information you can batch and you can use in a little more easy to manage fashion rather than requiring real time.
So here I'm going to have one more clarifying question for you, Phil, if you don't mind. So you mentioned PIM. A lot of people don't really understand what the role PIM really plays and how that is going to be related to the role, let's say, ERP or CRM or e-commerce is going to play. So do you want to clarify in terms of what problems you encountered that actually drove the need for a PIM system? Was there primarily, you were not able to store the specifications? Were the SKUs different in case of PIM system? Why did you need a PIM system and why that had to be part of the architecture?
Well, in both examples I came, it was companies that were standing up e-commerce for the first time, really a robust e-commerce platforms for the first time. And so you need pictures. I'll pick the one that everybody drowns in. You need pictures and videos. So that sounds really easy. Okay, go take some pictures and we need some videos. The next thing you know, you're drowning in thousands of versions and different styles of pictures. Some platforms want the picture in a certain size. Some platforms wanted it. You might want a different forward-looking picture on a consumer site than you do on your industrial site. All of a sudden you have thousands of this information and you've got people spending their time trying to manage it. What the PIM system does is it allows all go to in one spot. It allows each platform to pull it out in the format that they need it, and it allows someone just to manage one database of all the information. This applies to product descriptions. This applies to other informations, weights, dimensions, all sorts of information that if you don't have that centralized, weights and dimensions, for example, very important for your e-commerce platform to be able to quote freight, but also very important for the back end of the business to be able to handle logistics. So if you've got that information in two spots and it's different, you've got problems. You put it in one common spot and both those platforms can access it. That's when you have efficiencies and sanity in managing the information.
So thank you so much for that, Phil. And the way you started this panel, I have a feeling that this is probably going to be one of the most intense panel that we have had because you all are super powerful players. But the follow-up question from that conversation I'm going to have for Chris. Okay, so, and obviously we have to hear her story as well, what she has done. But before that, so let's say, when you talk about this PIM system and Phil is talking about, that needs to be centralized. Every system that you are going to have in your architecture, every vendor is going to claim that, hey, I am trying to centralize this. And one of the system that is going to be your ERP system. So ERP system is going to claim that, hey, I am trying to centralize the information. So what is the deal with this PIM system that this information needs to be centralized inside PIM as opposed to your ERP? Do you want to clarify that, Chris, first before you start on your story and architecture?
Sure. I think that traditional ways in which companies use ERP systems are for, hopefully this data resonates with our audience here, customer master data, item master data, price, inventory availability. But when you get into an e-commerce environment, you don't store your images, like Phil said, in your ERP system. You don't store your catalog and categorization and your facet management of products in your ERP system, typically. You might have a few fields that you can utilize, but my experience is most manufacturers aren't utilizing them. And if you are integrating multiple ERP systems and you're pulling data into a central e-commerce site, you need a location where that data can be centralized. And it is that ancillary data that typically isn't in an ERP, but is required to deliver a great customer experience that helps them validate that they're getting the right information. It could additionally be product information brochures, additional information that might be needed from an informational standpoint to, again, assist the user across their buying experience.
Okay, so do you want to describe your stories as well? I want to make sure that you are able to describe that, but I mean, I'm probably going to have this question for everybody.
Yeah, so I have a similar experience to Phil in that we've worked with a company, industrial company, who has, through acquisition, acquired many different brands, right? Which is what we have seen traditionally happen in large manufacturing companies. So through these acquisitions, they have as their vision to have a one-stop shop where they can service the industry that they just expanded their product portfolio for. So often what happens is that the digital transformation vision is above and beyond the transformation that the business has actually had. So they haven't consolidated how, as these companies and brands coming together, what would be the best customer experience and you know, buying journey to assist them in buying across these multiple brands. And that's why customer journey mapping becomes so essential to defining what is the solution that you're going to give your customers, particularly across these multiple brands. So this particular customer with us, they said, we want one solution. They had business in multiple countries, right? So multiple languages, multiple countries, multiple currencies, multiple ERP systems. Some sold whole goods that had full bills of materials with 2D and 3D drawings that assisted in the identification of parts. Other divisions had sales order documents that within the sales order, it identified the components that would need to be replaced. And those sales order documents did not have visual components that would come from an engineering department. So the way in which a user would access information to buy a support product when needed after the asset is owned was very different than the other division. So we were solving for these multiple ways in which customers would come to the site to utilize it and find the exact information they needed by brand. Additionally, users sometimes had accounts with one brand, and other users had accounts across multiple brands. And they wanted the ability that when a user logs in, they only see the division or brand that they have an account with. So that might, in this case, there were five brands. So if a user had accounts across three brands, they saw all three brands when they came in. And their IP picked up, were they a European customer, were they a North American customer, or were they an Asian customer? Because that reflected different aspects of the information that would be shown to them. So yes, there is a ton of complexity here. And it's why you have to truly simplify and define who are your users, where are they coming from, and what are their needs? And we find in our business, which is typically industrial manufacturers, that there are three, and we call these personas, right? So really personas are the different users of your e-commerce site. Usually they are the end customer. They are your internal users. And typically there's a third that might be a technical service department. It might be a distribution network if you sell to both distribution and direct to customer. So that's one story. I will tell you, I have a RFP sitting on my desk right now. Okay. From a large company who is looking to grow their business, significant growth. They have a multi-year, multi-phase vision for where they're going. And they've identified the components of where they believe they can grow and how they can grow, but they need help mapping. So they need the voice of the customer to help them understand how can they fulfill their customer's needs. They need the customer journey mapping to ensure that they're reaching all the customers in all of the locations where they do business today. They are going to need to identify all of their current systems and the integration points that are necessary for this digital transformation that they're ready to undergo. So all of what we're talking about today is so critical to these companies who have the vision and understand that they need to put money behind it to get there. It is hard work. It takes analysis, but certainly they can be the differentiator of the future. And these are the companies that are really going to lead the way.
Yeah. So customer journey is a very marketing term. I'm glad that, you know, you are talking in the IT conversation because that actually drives your IT architecture too. But now I am actually trying to follow your stories, and I am not sure if I followed everything in your story number one. So okay. We are going to go back to that. And in that, you mentioned that, you know what, you had information coming from three different systems and you had there some sort of, you know, authentication loyalty maintained in three different systems. And you were trying to aggregate that information when they tried to log in, this information was coming to them and they were able to see that. From the architecture perspective, how was the user information stored? Which was the central component here, which was reconciling the information across three different systems? Were you hitting the live API from your ERP and ERP actually had your central user information stored, or were you maintaining this information in three different systems?
So the ERP was the safe source for each of the brands. That's where their customer master, item master, all that data was stored. There were CAD systems that formed part of the process.
Yep.
There were CPQ systems that formed part of the integration process. And then this company did not have a PIM system. So okay. They utilized our database and we gave them templates to fill out data in order to support the configuration on the website to ensure the categorization of the parts, the part to image mapping or product to image mapping, depending on the type of product that they were selling. So there are multiple sources of information, the ERP truly being the safe source for the full transaction, but multiple sources for other data.
Okay, so we are definitely going to talk more with Chris. We are going to move to Chris as the follow-up question. So Chris, in this, I don't know if you're going to have any follow-up comments based on what Phil described, what Chris described. Always, you know, your data reconciliation is always going to be a challenge unless you have a true source of authority in your architecture. You have all of your data feeds mapped out in terms of who is going to be the authority for that specific data set. You can have multiple data sources, but you can't have the same data being updated by multiple systems. So if you have any comments to follow up on that, you can follow up. Otherwise, I am really interested in hearing your e-commerce stories and the architectural complexity that you have seen.
Sure. And I think I'll start with just the verifying that, yeah, why the ERP is not the PIM is, to that point, they don't have the real estate. You know, you may have some attributes, and I've got integrated ERPs where, okay, there's a checkbox that says web item. Great. Does that mean it'll go up there? The rest of the inventory is not on the web. So you can see some things like that, maybe some HTML, but I think categories, ERP may support one set of hierarchies. And I think, as you know, as Chris would know, that an item could show up all kinds of places. So you need lots of hierarchies. So again, what I've seen traditionally is the PIM is it's part of the e-com platform and it keeps all that content up there. So just verifying that. Yeah, I've got a couple of stories. Needless to say, I'm architecting a project right now for it's an apparel business. And so real specific, they manufacture and distribute athletic attire. They're doing very, very well. And of course, everybody's bigger than they think they are. And so as you look at architecture and cost, it's like there's a lot of pieces. And in this particular context, they have two websites. They're living on Shopify, and then they have an intermediate CRM designed to dedupe. And this is B2C. So I could buy here, different emails, and they're trying to dedupe. And then they're trying to feed the ERP. And guess what? And then they've got EDI out to a 3PL, and then they outsource their manufacturing. And they have a third-party credit card processor. So if you think about a lot of building blocks, and I think they're expensive. And again, why are they using a 3PL? Why are they outsourcing manufacturing? They're growing, right? And so they're like, and I wrote down, well, what are we good at, right? And businesses have to be careful to focus on what am I really great at and what business do I want to be in? And that's why when they go do an e-com project, they probably grab Chris's team. Just like I don't do the e-com projects, I leverage somebody that's really deep in that functionality. The other part of the architecture is integrations. And again, as Chris would say, this customer journey, you may not find an off-the-shelf e-com product that plugs in and does everything you want. But a lot of times you may find one, but it may not be built for your ERP. So integration services is an assumption as you walk in the door and really visualizing, again, swim lanes. And to that point, you know, what's moving, right? We got orders down, but I'm sending stock balances back. And, you know, and again, even the 3PLs and the stock balances. And is that inventory available? And, you know, to keep high fill rates and things like that, there's going to be different frequencies, right? You know, how quickly do the orders come down? Every hour we bring down orders. How quickly do we push back order status? Once a day. But maybe, you know, we update inventory stock very quickly. Maybe it's after every transaction. I've got one specific example where we've got a Shopify integration in Dynamics, and it is about real time. The orders come right in through an API, and as soon as an order hits, any changes to stock, it pushes back those incremental. It doesn't carte blanche replace all the stock. It's an item update. It fires it back. So it's a very elegant real-time interaction. Very fast. Very accurate. And again, we don't have any compromised orders because of that. So just a couple examples. One guy with a smaller infrastructure footprint was lucky enough to, he's got an ERP, he's got a Dynamics platform. He is a distributor and a manufacturer, so he's not using third-party products. He does have EDI, and he spun up multiple instances of his website, different brands, B2B. So it's a little different B2B. But this gentleman is, I think it's a pretty simple architecture, and he's printing money. We'd love to upgrade him, but he's been running on this thing for so long, I won't name his name. But, you know, when you really have it tuned up, right, don't go try to break it and fix it is one thing I would say. So, again, just a couple of stories there. But complicated architecture and swim lanes and data and synchronization, there's going to be a lot of cost there. So, again, established business versus startups, I think there's different conversations as to how you attack the problem. So,
yeah. So, Chris, you know that I like to have fun with you, right? So, we are going to have a little fun with you right now as well. So, in this particular case, so I know that you have touched briefly on the architecture that Shopify is going to be integrated real time with your ERP, as well as I think you have the CRM there as well, right? And if obviously it is going to be from Microsoft, Microsoft has out of the box integration.
It's not our CRM. We showed up, they had two websites and they had CRM, and what they're missing is all the back office pieces, but we still have to architect it.
In this particular case, obviously you are hitting the live API, but are you going to keep any data inside Shopify? What all data, since you are hitting the API, are you keeping any data at all inside Shopify? Or is it going to be the customer information is coming from your ERP or CRM, and your product information is coming from there, your order, your invoices? Is everything coming right from your API, or do you store anything inside Shopify?
Yeah, Shopify does have historical data in there, and it has content and has some of the PIM information for the website, you know, and then the marketing data is the CRM system for this organization, and that's their source of truth on marketing. The ERP owns the customer master. And again, it's a retail customer master, so it's important to dedupe it. And it owns stock balances and inventory. So there are some things the ERP owns, but absolutely the CRM is the book of record for marketing. And then the Shopify application has most of the e-com content out there. So it doesn't live in all three places in that case. But there's some redundancy, but it's clearly established the ERP is the book of record for inventory, not the 3PL. So for example.
So is it fair to say in this specific case that the data that you are going to keep in your Shopify is going to be the data that does not belong to your ERP, meaning, you know, that is only going to be used by marketing or e-commerce? Those are the only data sets that you are going to keep inside Shopify. The other data sets that are going to be slightly more operational and financial in nature, which is going to be all of your master records that are going to be touched by different systems as part of your operating layer, they are going to belong to your ERP and CRM, and you are going to be utilizing API to be able to talk to those, right?
Yeah, and I think if you think about a product master, there's a little bit of overlap. So the e-com site's going to have some of the ERP item, and a whole lot of other stuff. And the ERP is going to have overlapping, and it's going to have a whole lot of other stuff, but they're not going to be the same. And I think it's also with the customer profile. We're not going to keep credit cards, or we're not going to maintain any of that back office for the buying customer. We're not going to have any of their attributes, their profiles, any of that data. That would all live in the Shopify site or in the CRM site if they choose to synchronize it down into there for marketing purposes. So just a little bit of overlap, just as you think about key fields to link the information between the systems. But other than that, not completely redundant. It doesn't make sense to build out the ERP to match the e-com site. It's really not necessary.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chris, for that. Dave, I'm actually going to move to you. So what are your thoughts so far based on whatever we discussed, any disagreements, agreements, emphasis, your stories related to the micro verticals that you have seen?
Yeah. Thanks, Sam. A lot of good content so far out of everybody. Just a couple of things that I kind of jotted down as everybody was chatting through things and kind of relating this back to some of my experiences, kind of kicking off with Phil and, you know, this thought process of having decentralized, right? You've got all of these different components within the overall architecture, and it becomes very unwieldy very quickly. No matter if you're dealing with one instance or, to kind of Chris's point, when you start to acquire additional businesses and start to try to dial into what's this going to look like from a customer perspective. So a couple of the examples that I have, one in the print manufacturing space that kind of ties those two comments together. So this was a company that grew through acquisition. This was all B2B sales. And what complicated things was not only the kind of multitude of brands. So this was a business that had 20 some odd brands underneath their umbrella. What made it additionally complex was the fact that all of these other systems were not only decentralized, but there was no overall kind of sense of how exactly we're going to go to market with all of these. So kind of every acquisition was a bit of a learning process and a bit of trying to decide, okay, how exactly are we going to fit this into, you know, both the e-com side? Are we going to offer e-com for this particular brand? Does this brand already offer e-com? And now we have to somehow figure out what that's going to look like in our existing architecture. And what made it even more complicated is the customer masters would sometimes overlap because of the acquisition strategy for this particular company. So that's kind of one. And it really, to me, it kind of touches on both what Phil and Chris were saying, because to unwind all of that, what we really had to do was figure out, you know, that customer journey, figure out what those touch points were going to look like, and then figure out what was the most appropriate or kind of largest problem to solve at the time. So that could have been, let's just get them up on the ERP. Let's kind of leave the existing e-commerce as is. Let's, you know, send the information in batches, or let's send it, you know, kind of piecemeal as needed, versus trying to integrate and make a seamless transition right all at the same time. So that's kind of one example that I have in that space. The other example that I have is more of a direct-to-consumer. This was a manufacturing company. They sell hydraulic pumps. And same thing, the challenge with this was, again, the decentralized system. So what they were trying to do, this was an existing company that had been around for a long, long time before they built out their e-commerce platform. So they kind of had all of their data in static databases, as I would call them. And they were trying to figure out, how do I take those databases and connect them to the e-com side? But then the big challenge was, are we ready to integrate ERP into this? And if we are, how are we going to take what we've already done on the e-com side, which, you know, was through Shopify? So they kind of had all of this stuff living in one system, and were to the point where they needed to make the decision to say, do we, I don't want to say start over, but take what we have, layer in ERP, and then back to kind of one of your original questions about, well, where does that data ultimately end up living? In that case, they were maintaining basically duplicated systems. So they were leaving everything on the Shopify side and trying to recreate that on ERP and financial side, and then trying to, marry those together from kind of from the checks and balances standpoint. It ends up becoming very unwieldy very quickly. And the big challenge that I see with a lot of these different companies, you're doing it as you're growing. So you can't sit there and make a kind of grandmaster plan. You really are working through this as you have that growth mode. So, you know, all things being equal, it'd be great to sit back and kind of architect this entire thing. But in reality, it's a moving target. And, you know, we've got to be adaptive on the fly. And to Chris's point, kind of when you have an RFP, somebody coming in and has that strategy plan, has the capital set aside to be able to do some of that from a long-term perspective, it's kind of a different story. But a lot of the businesses that I've worked with haven't been quite into that situation. So it's been a little bit more scrappy, as I like to call it.
Yeah, very interesting story. So I am actually going to touch on one of these stories related to acquisition, because you have seen a lot of things from the acquisition perspective. So let's say if you are acquiring a lot of different businesses and the business that you are acquiring is completely different from the business model perspective. Traditionally, let's say you were not an e-commerce shop. You were sort of the manufacturer and distributor. You were doing very traditional ways of doing business. But the new business that you are acquiring is very e-com, very new kid in the town. You know, they grew because of their e-commerce presence, because of their digital skills. You are acquiring them so that you can get some of that talent and probably have your own e-commerce friend. So now in this particular case, what would you do? Because, you know, the ERP system that your legacy company is going to have, that's going to be very manufacturing, how data-centric ERP. And Dave, I mean, we both can agree on this one that, you know, the e-commerce distribution business, the transactional business is very different from your manufacturing B2B distribution-centric business. The planning processes are going to be very different. So how would you approach this? Would you wipe out the entire architecture, redraw and create a new ERP, and then create the architecture in the new business? Or would you try to integrate with the existing one? Are you going to change the ERP of the company that you are acquiring? How do you approach this problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and it's one that we faced in that business that was, you know, solely based on acquisition. And kind of to your point, what was neat about, I'll answer your question, but one thing I wanted to add to what you said, what was really fun to see is exactly what you said. When we would acquire a brand that was really strong on the e-com side that had, you know, talented people and or talented infrastructure, to be able to know that long term we were going to be able to come up to that. That was really exciting and interesting to see from an internal kind of systems perspective. But to get to the answer of your question, how I would approach that is to take the existing ERP that we have and, you know, try to mirror that into the e-com business, because what I've seen too often in any type of acquisition situation is that you try to change too much to make the new something old. It's kind of like what I say about somebody that's upgrading an ERP system, right? Let's not make the new system rather exactly what the old system is, because that's the reason that we're taking a look at all of the new features and benefits of this new system. And so I would say the same thing in the question that you have, where you have to utilize what's in place from an ERP perspective, because, you know, that's where your financials live. That's where, at least in my experience, a lot of this kind of single source of truth is going to stay. And then you integrate the good parts of the e-com platform, trying to not mess up the customer journey, because otherwise you're going to, in my experience, impact that business too significantly. And at that point, you know, you have a kind of another problem on your hands from an acquisition strategy, right? So that's been my experience, and that's how I would tackle it. I would be looking at ways to integrate with the least amount of customer disruption, with a long-term plan of taking everything that we've learned with the e-com side of that business, of this new acquisition, and figuring out how to bring the ERP ultimately up into that. Because from a long-term perspective, back to my point, the cool thing about acquiring a business that's really good on something you're not is you learn. And if you can bring your system up to that, then you've got the best of both worlds, and you've got something that you can really build on for future acquisitions and for the growth of your own business.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Dave, for that. So, you know, before I move on to Chuck, the next question I'm going to have for everybody are going to be these stories that I want from each of you, a couple of stories related to an integration challenge that you solved in the multi-system scenario for an e-commerce company. So Chuck, over to you. What are your thoughts so far based on the discussion we have had and your stories?
Well, I cannot put a bigger exclamation point on mapping the customer journey. And it comes to mind a tale of two hybrid organizations with which I am dealing and have dealt for some time. Each of these companies, they are a manufacturer of a small amount of their product, much of which is outsourced and brought in. They purchase product, which they distribute, they sell those products to wholesale to other resellers. They sell those products to Amazon for resale, and they each have their own e-commerce business. And lastly, in two different fashions, they are experiential products in that one is a hobbyist company. Okay. And the folks that do that are very hands-on people and they want to be learning. So they need to provide some experiential learning. And they have an actual retail presence where they can do that, as well as what they're able to accomplish through through their online, their e-commerce and marketing information. And the other company sells to companies who have retail presences because it's hats. And these are not the average hats that I can buy a hat, I can adjust it, and it's fun, and you know, it'll fit everybody. Some of these are extremely high-end hats, okay? And these hats are made to size, and the prices are not cheap, and they're very important brands in the market, and they're purchased all over the world. And people want that hat, and they want it to fit. Not only that, but in both of these cases, these people, there's a lot of recurring customers for a number of different reasons, primarily related to style. Okay. The hat styles change. The color styles change from season to season. There are, you know, activewear hats. There are fashion hats. There are functional hats to take care of my bald head. Okay. The other company caters very much to gifts. Okay. Not only do I want to do this, but they're gift giving, and that is an annual occurrence, and they have this skill and they want to do it over and over again. And so, but these different segments of their business provide incredible challenges related to the customer journey and subsequently the integration. So in both of these cases, they are leaning very heavily into the warehouse management system, because with all of these different aspects of their business, their biggest nightmare is inventory, plain and simple. You know, they can treat it as different warehouses, but even then they have different priorities. There are heavy penalties if you don't get that Amazon order out. Yep. Okay, so they receive a different priority. And the salespeople that handle the Amazon account and the distribution, the broker, you know, or the reseller accounts, they don't really think that they want to work in the same manner that the e-commerce companies do. So they're going to be working in a CRM platform. They're working more like conventional salespeople. Whereas the direct consumer and the e-commerce, they're now integrating marketing automation systems, because they're able to continue to, you know, generate loyalty, subsequent sales, recurring sales on an annual basis, that sort of thing. And these present incredible integration challenges, but they're all leaning into very heavily the warehouse management system, because that is their biggest challenge. As much as these disparate systems, ERP, WMS, marketing automation, e-commerce, and the retail channel, as much as that's very complex, their biggest problem is inventory. And that's where they really find that as much as important as finance is, as important as the customer master is, that source of truth in the end, if they're going to guarantee loyalty, is going to be making sure that they have the product to get the right thing, get set at the right time.
Yeah, so amazing stories. And I am going to have a follow-up question for you, Chris, as well, related to inventory. And I completely agree. Inventory is where the play is. And that's where the major challenges are going to be when you are going to grow. So when you talk about the committed inventory, and when you talk about managing this in the digital and physical mediums, so yes, you are going to have your web, the aisle or the shelf inside your ERP system. You are probably going to have a barcode as well. But when it comes to really committing or the allocating the inventory, how do you make sure that your inventory that was allocated to your Amazon account, nobody is going to steal that in the physical medium? What are some of the best practices that you have seen? Because the physical and the digital needs to sort of be in sync to be able to have the real allocation to work when you have a lot of demanding customers that are really penalizing you if you are not able to get your product out the door.
Well, they don't need to be sort of in sync. They need to be 100% in sync, because it is about the customer experience. Yeah. And, you know, that is why Amazon has the penalties that they have. That's why Walmart has the penalties that they have, is because they're insisting on a certain customer experience. And you and I know that in an e-commerce situation, I might be buying one hat. Okay. Or I might be buying one product, but if they send me the green one instead of the blue one, I'm going to be extremely unhappy. Yeah. It's one thing if you're sending a pallet of products and it's a mix. Okay. You have a little bit of room for error. As the order quantities in e-commerce go from what used to be in business, dozens and dozens in pallets, increasingly the order size is approaching one. The margin for error in customer experience, customer journey is razor thin. And so that inventory has to be 100% in sync. And so these companies, they tend to be small, medium businesses. You know, small business can be defined up to, you know, 50, 100 employees, tens of millions of dollars in the scheme of things. Medium business is bigger, but they have these disparate systems. And overwhelmingly, they're dealing with APIs. They're dealing with integrating these systems. They have to deal with it in real time. They can't deal with EDI, which is going to come to them in batches. They just simply can't. It has to be a real-time integration.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chuck. So we are really close to our time now. Obviously, we need to move slightly quicker with respect to our stories. So, Phil, I am actually going to come back to you for your story related to an integration challenge that you have solved for an e-commerce company that was because of the architectural misalignment that you did not foresee, but then you figured out based on the architecture when you had the multiple systems in the business.
Certainly. So a client I'm working with right now has, and I wasn't sure if you're going to do acquisition or integration on this question. So I'll answer it this way. I think it kind of fits to the integration side more than the acquisition side. But they have it's retail furniture. They've stood up a Magento e-commerce site, and their challenge is customer journey. And yep. So they really are having to work on the customer experience and the customer journey. And what I would say is, from an integration standpoint, we spent a day and a half with this executive team planning and really laying out what needs to happen in order to optimize the customer experience, customer journey, both sides of that. And most of the real strategic action steps and follow-up action steps were actually about internal processes. This kind of overlaps with Chuck's point and overlaps with a couple points that Chris and Chris made. All right, so from an inventory standpoint, for example, their challenge was having the associates in the store to be able to tell the customer in real time the availability of something that customer was wanting to buy. It was a pain point that was expressed in their voice of the customer surveys, and it was also a pain point that was being expressed by their associates on their store floors. But the problem wasn't there. The problem was in the ERP system, and the problem was in the processes of actually having the ERP system know what the inventory statuses were. And one of the questions asked in that was the process of bringing a product to commerce or to a store and the process of discontinuing it. And it turned out that that process was loose. So there was an inventory discipline that what Chuck was talking about that required a real change in thinking of how important every small cycle count was, a robust cycle counting system, how important that information in where the truth was in the ERP was correct and was being communicated correctly to the e-commerce site or to the store tablets. And then the second piece of that was just being able to say, when we bring a new product out, and this relates to the PIM conversation and the other data conversation, that we do it where we have everything correct. And Chris, at Turnkey's point, some data is going to be in the ERP, some data is going to be somewhere else. You're just not going to have all those fields and all that information. So you're going to have multiple spots. So I guess the integration comment I would make is the back-end systems have to really be buttoned down in a way that most of these mid-markets that I deal with aren't used to, because that's what's creating the noise in the front-end system, is that the process isn't buttoned down in the first place.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Phil, for that. So, Chris, I'm actually going to move to you for the integration challenge that you have solved for your customer because of the architectural misalignment.
Yeah, so we've had an overhead crane manufacturer that typically when you're asked to roll out an e-commerce solution, you're going to meet customers where they are in their business processes, right? And that's where the solutions have to come up when you're architecting what is going to be the e-commerce solution and where the integrations fall. So this particular business, their technical service teams, their production environment had all moved to Epicor. So they had upgraded their ERP system, but their part support, where they were going to utilize an e-commerce system, was still on an older version of Sage that did not have standard APIs. And they did not want to upgrade their standard to another Sage because they knew eventually they would move to Epicor. So what we had to solve for was, were we going to do batch processes where there would be slight delays in what would be available in the ERP system related to current price, current availability, because you'd have to do that in a timed frequency? Yep. Or could we find a source that could potentially link the integration and be a provider so that we could do a real-time integration to support all the processes where you want to have real-time integration? So when we had originally talked to them, we didn't know that their data system was that outdated. We thought they were moving to Epicor. They decided to stay on Sage, and we did find a third-party integrator who already had those APIs mapped and established. So they had the connectors that we could connect through. So that's one thing. I will tell you, as the developer of an e-commerce solution, we've had to solve for a lot of issues related to performance. That's the best way I can describe it, right? So you will maybe go through your configuration checklist with the customer that's determining the architecture for your site. And they're going to say, we want real-time calls for order status and order, all the order information. And what you find is that's great for a customer who places a few orders with you. When it makes that call to the ERP system in real time, calling, returning that is a faster process for those customers that don't do a lot with you. When you have the customer who's generating business with you every day and there are multiple orders in the time frame in which you're calling information, that slows down the site and creates an experience for the customer that is invaluable. So we've had to look at those performance issues and say, is there a better way to integrate? And that's where we have gone to batch processes, to Phil's point earlier. You don't need real-time data for everything in order to deliver a great performance and great information to your customers. So those are some integration challenges I would just talk quickly about that certainly we experience and solve for.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chris, for that. Again, Chris, I'm actually going to move to you now. Now, Chris and Chris is actually becoming confusing. So, Chris Gherardini, okay, your turn. Sorry.
So, yeah, some challenging integration touch points, just a couple ones historically, is you think about credit card processing. And in the B2C world, we want to take your money on the website. We want to tell you exactly what it costs. We estimate the tax, the freight. Okay, by the time it lands in the ERP, you know, a lot of times that ERP isn't going to calculate exactly there. So what you can end up with is rounding. It's just fractions, but the invoice, the transactions don't close out. And again, so there's configuration. You really got to work your ERP to make sure that if you're really charging the card on the front and you drop it in there, that you don't really have any adjustments. The other model you get into in B2B, you typically authorize the credit card and you settle it after you ship it. That integration requires you to pass that token from the credit card processor down to the ERP. So what's that mean? You got to use almost the same credit card clearinghouse in the e-com as you do in the back office. So again, it's an integration consideration to keep track of. The one that throws a challenge out there, we're dealing with a Shopify client that integrated to a legacy on-prem Dynamics app that didn't have APIs. And what's that mean? We're writing direct integrations. You're not necessarily going through business logic. And what happened is the Shopify sites can do more than the ERP. So beware, in this particular instance, as they're out there configuring Shopify and coming downstream and blowing up the ERP. Promotions. Wow. That's an interesting topic. How do you do a promotion? Well, how's your ERP do it? My ERP doesn't know what a promotion is. Shopify does. So again, there's another scenario. It's like doing a PO where, oh, I'm going to get free stuff. Oh, I can't take free stuff. Imagine putting free stuff and trying to handle the PO process. It really is funny that free stuff screws up people's systems. So just beware.
I know.
Because it's free doesn't mean it's easy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the sampling in the wine industry, I guess, you know, that's really challenging. Okay, thank you so much, Chris, for that. Dave, I'm going to move to you for your story.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I've got one from a kind of touching on what Chris had said. Chris Harrington, to be clear, had said in terms of, you know, working in some legacy ERP systems. We had a client that we had worked with that was on a WooCommerce platform, and for their e-com side, and they were using a legacy Sage system. And they were basically looking for the integration to be able to write all the journal entries. And similar to kind of Chris's result, it was a matter of ultimately what we decided to go with was batch processing, because it just made the most amount of sense for, again, kind of the customer journey and what people really needed to see, back to, you know, touch on Phil's point about that real-time integration. So that was one. And then Chris Gherardini, you mentioned something that kind of jogged my memory. And one of the big challenges in one of the print manufacturing situations that we had were a lot of overages. So you know, customer may order 1,000 pieces, but we would ship 1,100 pieces. And similar to the credit card transactions and, you know, the misalignment within our ERP system, and, you know, was it a pre-authorization and then capture after the end? And what do we do with all, you know, all of the remainder transactions that were left out there? So those are just a couple of, you know, the quick challenges that I've faced. And I guess one last one on what Chuck had mentioned from a process perspective and touching on that real-time inventory, we've had to do some things where, you know, we are generating in real-time pick tickets that, you know, are getting dropped to a remote location to make sure that things like, you know, what Chuck was bringing up in terms of being able to know real-time inventory and having your ERP match up with what's in physical. We've done things like that in the past to try to mitigate different things. But again, it all comes back to what your processes are, understanding your customer journey and making sure that all of that's connected.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Dave, for that. Chuck, your story, please.
Yeah, I really want to put an exclamation point on both Phil and Dave's point. I mean, I'm a process guy, and the problem that I've solved is really more of an ERP and planning problem. This is a little bit of blasphemy, but honestly, integration is the least of your problems, especially if you're going into in your manufacturing situation. The way the economy has evolved is that people's expectation for delivery is immediate, and the lead time for the end product is far shorter than the lead time for what goes into it. And if you are not planning up front using your ERP system, okay, if you are not ensuring that you have a robust and lower risk supply chain, making sure that those things get there when they need to get there, I don't care whether you're a distribution business, a reseller, a broker, a manufacturer, you're not going to be able to guarantee a customer experience. The integration becomes irrelevant. Once you have that planning in place, then again, inventory in as close to real time as possible. We tend to think big business centric, where they have these unlimited resources. But I would like to think that there are a lot of people out there that are listening to us. They're small, medium businesses who don't have the unlimited resources, and they're going to need to cobble together their systems and work with APIs and work with EDI, work in batch when they can. And so solve the process problems up front and then work within your resources and make the most important part of your business, whatever that is, as real time as possible.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chuck, for that. You know, we are only going to take closing advice. Phil, what is going to be your closing advice in one sentence, please?
So the platforms that you're setting up are a reflection of your physical processes in your business. And so if you have issues in ERP or you have issues on the e-commerce platform, trace them back to what's really happening in the business and fix that. And then your platforms are and the integrations are going to be just much easier for you.
Could not agree more. Thank you so much, Phil, for that. Chris, what is going to be your closing advice in one sentence?
Yeah, I love the comment on process, all of it from everyone here. I would just add to that don't get stuck on current processes, because if that's not meeting the needs of the customers, then you have to rewrite the process, right? So voice of customer, the way in which you want to do business to improve, to get to the sales goals you're trying to get, is really important as well. So that should be a part of that process definition.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chris, for that. Chris, your closing advice, one sentence, please.
Yeah, just plan ahead and be prepared for what could come. Again, I think you need to be ready that if you turn this thing on, you can't turn it off, okay? So just be ready. And to everybody's points, analyze your processes, make sure you're not going to blow up your business if you get 1,000 orders the first time you open up the site. So.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for that. Dave, what is your closing advice, one sentence, please?
Yeah, thanks, Sam. My closing advice is really start with the end in mind. And what I mean by that is start with the customer journey, work your way backwards through the actual systems and down to the process level.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. Chuck, what would be your closing advice?
Micromanage your end customer user experience. Figure out what buttons they're going to push and work backwards from there. They're the only thing that matters.
I love it. Thank you so much, Chuck. And by the way, guys, I mean, see, this is what happens when you have really quality panelists. This is probably one of the best panels that we have had so far. So thank you so much for that. On that note, once again, thank you, everyone.
Have a great night, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Take care, man.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Chuck Coxhead, head over to ProCensus.com. It's ProCensis.com. If you want to learn more about Chris Garadini, head over to TurnkeyTech.com. It's TurnkeyTech.com. If you want to learn more about Dave Chrysler, head over to TheChrysler.club. It's TheChrysler.club. If you want to learn more about Phil Kerper, head over to RinglingBusinessSolutions.com. It's RinglingBusinessSolutions.com. If you want to learn more about Christina Harrington, head over to GenAlpha.com. It's GenAlpha.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Jason Greenberg, who discusses the nuances of the click and collect process and why you need a centralized inventory and distribution strategy to enable this experience. Also, the interview with Richard Halter, the Wizard of Paths, who describes the challenges associated with buy online, pick up at store model. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.